May it please the court, my name is C.J. Roberts. I'm attorney for the appellant in this matter, the Department of Health and Human Services. This case, again, is in relation to the implementation of LB 561. Specifically, the department is alleging that the separate juvenile court of Lancaster County, Nebraska, erred by placing Marcella G. at the Youth Rehabilitation Treatment Center on or after July 1st, 2013, without making it a condition of intensive supervised probation as required under 43247.02 subsection 2.
This is essentially the same issue that you were here earlier this week to argue in Quincy J.
Your Honor, this is the exact same issue, and I believe this court has put on its docket two of the exact opposite cases where I'm sitting in an appellee's chair, an appellant. We'll be up here making the argument first.
So you have the rare opportunity to get a second bite at the argument apple.
Yes, Your Honor. 10-minute rebuttal.
All right.
excuse me, in light of that, I did try to focus on the questions that were asked on Wednesday, I guess. My feeling was the court had questions regarding the language in 247.02 sub 2 about notwithstanding any other provision of Nebraska law. There were also some questions concerning commitment versus placement, as well as what does this actually mean for the child. In that case, it was Quincy J., and in this case, it's Marcella G. The department still believes that under subsection 2, this court doesn't need to go any farther to determine the legislative intent because it was plain, clear, and unambiguous. The department still stands by the fact that the language in subsection 2 talks about youth who are committed to the Office of Juvenile Services, but not just committed to the Office of Juvenile Services, but also placed at the Youth Rehabilitation and Treatment Center. I don't think there's any question in the record that Marcella G. was placed on or after July 1st of 2013. If the court does look at the issue in context with subsection 3, I believe it's important to look at all of subsection 3. I don't think this was brought up in previous arguments, but subsection 3 has further subsections A through D. I still believe that subsection 3 applies to the department's authority and obligations towards youth who do not fall under or didn't fall under at the time they were committed LB 561. Then subsection 3 goes on in A through D to talk about when the youth could be coming out of department custody. And essentially, A is when the youth reaches the age of majority. B is when the youth is no longer under the care and custody because the guardian's been appointed or the youth's been adopted. C, the juvenile's discharged pursuant to 43412. That's the OJS Act. That's a parolee. So that's assuming somebody's already been a carny or the juvenile court terminates jurisdiction. Appellee would have the court believe that this commitment, the original commitment to the Office of Juvenile Services, is the only trigger date. And in this case, Marcella G. was committed in March of 2013, the OJS, but then on July 8th, placed with the Office of Juvenile Services. But if we have a youth who, up until the end of September, is committed to the Office of Juvenile Services at a community level, it could be that 6 months, 1 year, or 2 years from now, something would happen, the youth would have a struggle, and there would be a motion to place this youth at YRTC. Under appellant's argument or position, the court would still have to place that youth as the law existed on January 1st of 2013. And I just can't believe that that's what the legislature would intend in that circumstance. The department's position is that the court has found that that placements are dispositional in nature. I think that's just common sense. In this particular case, originally Marcella was placed with the department for a community-based level of care. Marcella was then placed at the YRTC. She's not placed at both. She's not committed to the Office of Juvenile Services for both. In other words, when that court changed the placement, it modified its dispositional order. It would have had to, because she's no longer placed at the community-based level or placement. She's now placed in the care and custody of the Office of Juvenile Services or placement at the Youth Rehabilitation and Treatment Center. I think that also makes sense when it's looked at in context of the Office of Juvenile Services Act. In the Office of Juvenile Services Act, much like the community and family reentry process, the language, and I believe I cited in my brief, 407 subsection 1, and I referenced a string of other statutes in the OJS Act, but the distinguishing factor there is they all talk about for any youth placed at the Youth Rehabilitation Treatment Center on or after this date, they're to be provided these services, or they're to be treated in this manner. Similar to the community and family reentry process, which I talked about on Wednesday, and provides Marcella with the formal and informal supports, provides her with ongoing court supervision.
Counsel, that language that you're talking about from the Juvenile Services Act, that's the language after January 1. It's not the language that existed on January 1, isn't that right?
Yes, Your Honor. However, it's the language now, and it's kind of a strange situation, because if a juvenile was committed before October 1st, we go back to the January 1 language and we use all of that. But they seem to have carved out an exception for the YRTCs, because when it's referred to by the OJS Act, when it's referred to by the community and family reentry process, and in fact when it's referred to by 43247.02 subsection 2, this July 1st date is carved out for whatever reason for placement at YRTC. So I would say that this LB 561 was enacted in March of 2013, became effective the same day, and I interpret the Office of Juvenile Services Act to be saying exactly what it does, that if a youth is placed with the Office of Juvenile Services at the Youth Rehabilitation Treatment Center on or after July 1st, that youth would fall under the new law. I hope that answers your question.
I agree it's complex, and I'll certainly take a look at it.
And one other side issue I wanted to briefly address, I believe is addressed in my, I guess I could say, opponent's brief, is the new requirements in 43286. I would say that one of the requirements, both before and even after the language changes, there can't be any less restrictive level of care appropriate. So I would say that whatever the juvenile court, whatever evidence was before the juvenile court, I think we can all agree that at the time, the juvenile court could not make any finding that there was a less restrictive level of care. So I don't know that we can make the argument the youth should have had to go through all the levels of probation, et cetera, prior to being placed at YRTC.
Do you have to go through those levels, or does there just have to be a showing to the court, an argument that would show their availability of other levels?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's exactly how my experience has been at trial court level. The court says, if it's a youth who is going to be committed now after July 1st, the court will say, this level is not appropriate. A lot of these youth may have been on probation, already have it revoked anyway, but even for those that aren't, the Office of Juvenile Services, they're often placed at more structured environments, so the court usually will make a finding, yes, Your Honor, that these other levels are not appropriate, and the only appropriate level is the YRTC.
And then they jump into the order.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
If there are no other questions.
Can I ask you something? This is a little off track, but in your opening remarks, you said there's some other cases out there, and besides what we heard earlier in the week, or perhaps your appellee in those other matters. Do you happen to know the names of those?
Yes, Your Honor. One is Terencia E., and I believe that's already been docketed for the next line of oral arguments. The other one, but I have to remember the spelling. It's something to the effect of N-A-G-A-I-Z-A-S, and S being the last name.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Tim, good morning.
Good morning. Okay, please the court. I'm Arjean Tim. I'm an attorney with the Lancaster County Public Defender's Office. Our office represents the appellee, the juvenile in this case, Marcella. I agree with Mr. Roberts that this is the exact issue that you heard on Wednesday on the Quincy J case. It's not a factual dispute. It's purely a legal issue. It's the interpretation of 43247.02.
Why would your client not want the services that would be provided under the new act?
First of all, Your Honor, I would ask that you, as indicated by Mr. Robert, look at what the Office of Juvenile Services Act, the OJS Act, provides. There really is not a lot of difference between the reentry provisions that are in place now through LB 561 with probation and what was in place prior or presently for those kids who are at YRTC. If the court specifically looks at 43407 sub 1 sub F, a case management and coordination process designed to assure appropriate reintegration of the juvenile to his and her family, school, and community. This process shall follow individualized planning, which shall begin at intake and evaluation. Structured programming shall be scheduled for all juveniles. This program shall include a strong academic program, as well as classes in health, living skills, vocational training, behavior management, modification, money management, family and parent responsibilities, substance abuse awareness, physical education, job skills training, job placement assistance. So in some respects, the statute that is in effect for the reintegration of the kids coming out of YRTC is more specific than the reentry provisions under LB 561.
But isn't it correct that under LB 561, those reentry provisions are subject to court supervision, whereas under the OJS Act, they're not?
That is the distinction, and I know the courts have had frustration with that they're not able to continue to control the juveniles once they come out of YRTC, that it is at the discretion of the Office of Juvenile Services. So that is the big distinction. But when a youth walks out of YRTC, they are under conditions of liberty, they are admitted to the Office of Juvenile Services. These are the reintegration process that is specified that the Office of Juvenile Services is supposed to be giving to these youth. As I indicated, it's a legal issue in terms of the interpretation of 43247.02. We would ask that the court also read the entire provision. It's sub 2 and sub 3 that are at issue. Health and Human Services, Office of Juvenile Services relies on sub 2, where the juveniles are relying on sub 3. But if you look at this act this section in its entirety, sub 1 starts out saying, notwithstanding any other provision of Nebraska law on or after October 1st, no juvenile adjudicated pending law violation status offense can go to the Health and Human Services, Office of Services, other than as allowed by sub 2 or sub 3. Then B, any juvenile adjudicated pending adjudication law violation status offense cannot be placed in the care and custody of Office of Juvenile Service Department of Health and Services other than as allowed by sub 2, sub 3. C, that HHS, OJS cannot supervise an adjudicated pending adjudication other than as allowed by sub 2, sub 3. And finally, sub D, Health and Human Services, OJS, cannot be required to pay for, arrange for, provide for any juveniles as adjudicated or pending adjudicated other than allowed by sub 2 or sub 3. So sub 1 is all you can't do this. Sub 2 is up until October 1. Sub 2 is you can't do this. You can't commit somebody to YRTC after July 1 other than as allowed by this other provision, which is the ISP thing. Sub 3 is the provision that says, carves out an exception. It says, nothing in this section shall be construed. So other than what is allowed in sub 3, that is the exception. That's the adder provision. And there is a carving out, and it is those kids that are committed to OJS at a community level prior to October 1, 2013. Those kids have been carved out.
So that's the transitional provision.
Yeah, there are several dates, but that's the ultimate.
Chronologically, in terms of implementation.
That's correct. And that's why, beyond the reading of the plain reading of the statute, there are policy reasons that need to be considered here. The legislature made it a time, a phase-in period for a reason, and that was to allow probation to get up and running, get staffed, get their services, and that's why there was a phase-in period. What we have is Health and Human Services Office of Juvenile Services trying to move all these community OJS kids over to probation prior to what the deadline is. So
when a youth is committed to OJS for placement other than at a YRTC, and sometimes subsequently to that, it's decided that the youth needs to go to a YRTC. Is there another commitment, or is there simply a change of placement?
It is a transfer. I have a different word, and if you look at the brief, and that was the second argument, it's not so much a placement. The words that should be used are commitment or transfer. The Office of Juvenile Services, Health and Human Services, in this case, they captioned their motion, a motion for approval of higher level or alternative disposition, and they cited 43-286, which is a disposition statute. This youth was committed, Marcella was committed to the Office of Juvenile Services community base prior to July 1. She is under the OJS Act. She is not under the dispositional statute. She had no law violations pending. If you look at the OJS Act, there's provisions, there's the procedures, there's the standards, there's what the judge has to find in order to transfer an OJS committed kid, community-based, from a lower level to a higher level. And if you look at the juvenile judge's order in this case, that's exactly what he did. In his order, he said, I approve that part of the motion that is asking for a more restrictive placement to YRTC.
And so that's a transfer.
That's a transfer under the OJS Act. I approve that transfer, and I believe that's the exact language that the juvenile judge did. He said he approves the transfer to a more restricted level, that being YRTC, and then he went on to say he disapproved or overruled that portion of the motion that asked for the alternative disposition of ISP. And that's where the difference is. It's not a disposition, it's a transfer under the OJS Act. So we are asking that the court read 247.02 with all the provisions and to look at sub 3 as the adder, as carving out this group of kids, community-based kids, kids who have not been to YRTC up until October 1, 2013. I guess to follow up on a question by Justice Hevekin about the benefits of it, right now there are kids who are at YRTC not on intensive supervision probation. Those are all the kids clearly that were placed there prior to July 1, 2013. So there is an exception being made right now. We have two classes of kids, those that are coming out subject to parole under the OJS Act and those that are coming out on ISP. If the legislature wanted more kids to have the benefit of the reentry procedure, the legislature could have said, okay, July 1, 2013, every kid coming out of Kearney is going to go back in front of the judge for reentry probation and for the community reentry program. But they didn't do that. They carved out this exception. And we're asking that the court read sub 3 that way and to look at the difference between commitment under 43-240 or 286, the dispositional, versus the OJS Act under the transfer. And then lastly, if the court were to interpret this section as the Health and Human Services OJS wants you to interpret it, then you have to do a de novo review of the facts in this case. And under the new dispositional statute as amended by LB 51, before a youth can go to YRTC, that there has to be an exhaustion of all levels of probation supervision and options for community-based services. The court has to find that. The facts in this case was this girl was adjudicated on March 1st, 2013. She was, her dispositional hearing was March 12th, 2013. She was committed to OJS out of home. July 5th, 2013, OJS filed the motion. The evidence is the affidavit in the motion. The only thing that was ever tried for her, she was put in a group home and she ran. She's never been on probation. So if you do a de novo review of the facts, you cannot find that all probation supervision levels and community-based services have been exhausted, because they haven't. But again, that's why this group of kids was carved out, because if you look at the OJS Act, there is sufficient evidence for the juvenile court to say, yes, you violated your conditions of liberty, and for community safety and your safety, I can transfer you to a higher level. So there was sufficient evidence under the OJS Act. There's not sufficient evidence.
As to this juvenile, is this correct then? You're saying as to this juvenile, all levels don't need to have been experienced. There just has to be a finding that those would be fruitless.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm sorry.
Not
what I'm
me.
Saying is that the evidence substantiated a transfer under the OJS Act, because it's a different standard. Under the OJS Act, for the higher level, the court had to find that she violated her conditions of liberty, and that that the community safety in her interest dictated that she needed a more restrictive level. So there's no requirement of the exhaustion under the OJS Act,
okay,
which applies to this juvenile.
Thank you.
Thank you, and we're asking that you affirm the juvenile court judge by denying the alternative disposition.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is Kelly versus State.